It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to the Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. Sitting in for Maria Chaleos today, I'm Dave Meekum. And if you haven't, if you're just joining us, then you got a great surprise coming, because not only do we have the infamous Tom Bettis with us this morning from the USU Extension, but Mike Caron and J.D. Gunnell have joined us as well. And there is a wealth of experience and knowledge here, and we are here to help you. So this is a great opportunity for you to call in and get your questions answered today. But before we get back to the phones, we have a plan of the week. And Mike, you have that, right?
Yeah, and Tom. Tom and I talked about this earlier this morning. So I'll let Tom kind of introduce it. This is kind of his baby.
Well, the plan is Xanthotheres. Wow.
Words are hard this morning. Xanthotheres sorbifolium.
So what are some of the common names?
So just simply called yellowhorn or Chinese flowering chestnut. This is a small tree, your large shrub, that is native to kind of the drier, rocky hillsides in northern China, that has slowly been making its way into cultivated landscapes. Now, it is used in some parts of the world as a food source. The plant's very edible. The seeds are often roasted and eaten that way. It supposedly tastes something like macadamia nut. The leaves are edible. But I haven't had deer eat it in my yard yet, so I don't know. My trees are about 12 feet tall.
But that's just because we were talking about how
the deer in Saratoga
are not as bright as normal deer.
Yeah.
They're urban deer.
They're drinking lake water.
Wrong side of the tracks.
They're drinking lake water from all the algae blooms.
Yeah, so the tree itself, we're finding that we should get this out of the way too. You can't bop into a garden center and just buy it.
But we figure if we can create demand for it, maybe then we'll start carrying this.
But it's very drought hardy and so far disease free.
Yeah, and I haven't had, like, I've had it in my yard now. I've got a tree that's probably 8 years old, two trees that are about 8 years old. No iron chlorosis. It handles the salinity and the high pH and the clay loam soil that I have. And I have it in two places. One's just on a drip irrigation system that gets watered, you know, once or twice a week. And the other one is near an area where it gets run off from my neighbor's lawn. So it gets a lot more water than the other one. And they're both the same size. So they're really happy with getting their needs met, and their needs seem to be pretty minimal.
How large will they get?
Oh, about 20, 25 feet tops. So they're not a very big tree. They would be great for small spaces under power lines with minimal needs for pruning and trimming.
So for you, is this a tree that is mostly decorative, or are you actually actively consuming it and using
it as
a
food source?
No, I
don't consume it. It's decorative, and I'm kind of one of those guys that likes to have something that nobody else is going to have.
Okay.
So this is one of those. I have some other ones too, but this was one of my favorites.
And Mike grew a bunch from seed a couple of years ago, and I've got one. So it's drought hardy, but also cold hardy. I've got one in Cache Valley that's doing great.
Yeah, it's known to be hardy from zones through zones 4 to 7, at least. And I suspect that it's going to be hardier to warmer climates, even probably to 8. So, and I'd like to get this into southern Utah and see how it does down there.
When does it bloom?
So it blooms in May typically. It only
ornamental.
It's very ornamental. So it's covered with small white flowers with yellow throats. It only blooms for about 2 weeks, but it's kind of one of those ones when it's in bloom, you know, people will stop the car and ask you what it is.
One of the nicest ones I've seen is Jordan Valley Water Conservation District.
Yeah, and that's the only one that I knew of for many years, and that's actually how I got the seeds originally from one of my colleagues there, Mike Lawrence, who shared seeds with me, and that I've been growing it and cultivating it and spreading the word about it and trying to get people to think about this as a possibility.
So if you want to see one, you can go to the district or, you know, Mike's house.
Yeah, just come to my house. You want to drive clear down to South Utah County.
All right. So, you know, if somebody is interested and wants one, best way to get one then is to.
So what I've got, I usually harvest the seeds off of mine in the fall. They kind of get about a golf ball to racquetball sized pods on them.
Oh, big ones.
And there's usually several seeds inside each pod. Mm-hmm. So, gosh, I think last year when I collected seeds off there, I probably got more than a pound of seeds. And I quit harvesting after that. There was just a lot. So my trees are starting to produce quite a bit of fruit.
Cool.
So if they want, if anybody's interested, I think I'll start a list of people that are interested and maybe just message me through my email, michael.karen@usu.edu.
Will you spell that out?
Spell Karen, yeah.
Yeah, so it's michael.caron@usu.edu. And then I can arrange maybe a seed exchange or something, or put them at the county office in Orem, and let people come in and, you know, take five seeds. They tend to germinate pretty readily without any special treatment.
Do you think there's still time to germinate them this year and plant them out, or would you store
them as a houseplant? No, if they're germinated this year, then they'll grow and probably overwinter, and then I would look at planting them in the spring.
Okay. Well, let's try and get one call in here before we go to another break, and that's Carol in Orem. Carol, you've been waiting patiently. How can we help you out today?
Hi, good morning. I have a new home to me. The previous owner has ivy everywhere, all over the house, all over the yard, everywhere. So I've been yanking it down and thinning it out, but it seems that in all of the ivy is so many snails that they are everywhere, and I have planted in a lot of the areas that I've yanked out all of this ivy, but I cannot get on top of the snails. They are just so prevalent. Do you have a suggestion what to do with? I literally have a yard full of snails.
Ducks.
I was going to say the Great Salt Lake,
get half a dozen ducks.
Oh, no, I have so many snails, I could, if they could be eaten, I would have a restaurant. There are so many snails.
Oh, boy.
Open a French restaurant, that's great.
Right.
You're looking at snails, you either have to change the habitat or you need to apply some sort of a bait.
And I think a combination of both of those things to get started would be good. A snail bait, and then looking at trying to dry the areas out, reducing the foliage that they're going to hide in, and even the mulch, trying to at least rake that occasionally and stir that up.
I did bring in a lot of mulch, and they seem to now just jump into the part of the garden that don't have the mulch. So just use the snail bait in those parts.
Yeah, and I mean, there are some pet-safe snail baits you can try, and if you don't have success with those, then you might jump over to something containing metaldehyde, which is a little bit stronger, but metaldehyde does a pretty good job against those snails if you follow the instructions on the package.
Okay, terrific. Thank you so much.
Long term, yeah, you're going to try and dry it out, keep the foliage off the ground, those kinds of things.
All right, Carol.
Okay, great. Thank you. Uh-huh.
Good luck. Thanks for your call. And KSL Talk is the line if you have your question. We are going to jump out and take a break. Jerry on Provo is waiting on the line. We're going to get her on the other side. Really quickly, before we get that break, though, Mike, we've got two texts here asking one more time what the name of the tree was you were just mentioning.
So it's called Yellowhorn, and you can just Google it if you want. Yellowhorn.
Yellowhorn.
Xanthoceras sorbifolium is the scientific name. Xanthoceras is the genus. It's the only species in the genus. So
there you go. Okay, we will jump out and take that break now. And on the other side, we'll be back with more of your calls on the KSL Greenhouse Show.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
you can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on kslpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. Thanks for being here today. Tom promised to take a call from Jerry, so let's do that. Jerry, you're calling in from Provo. How are you today?
I'm doing great, thank you.
How can we help you out?
Well, I planted some nasturtiums because I love to have those orange and yellow blossoms and the leaves in my salads. They're so colorful and tasty, but I can't get any blossoms. I've got some leaves, and they're pretty healthy-looking leaves, except now they're starting to have brown spots on them. I don't know why. There's a couple that look a little shriveled, but I don't know what the brown spots are, and I don't know why I'm not getting any blossoms.
Are they in the shade?
No.
I mean, when I say, I know nasturtiums are shade tolerant, but if it's too deep of shade, they won't blossom.
No,
then
shaded off.
How often are you irrigating?
Well, they're just in a planter in my patio.
Okay, so is it artificial soil in your planter?
There's some of that.
I mean, when you say some, is it all artificial soil or?
No, it isn't all artificial soil.
Like potting soil. Is it just a potting soil mix that's in there?
Right.
Yeah, so that's what Tom is referring to. That's artificial soil, meaning it doesn't have any natural field soil in it. So it's just a potting soil. What kind of fertilizers are you using in it?
Well, I have a fertilizer. Well, I use the, what is it for tomatoes? What's it called? The green granules.
Okay. Do you know if it has micronutrients in it? Like iron, boron, magnesium, manganese?
I don't know. I don't know.
So it could be nutrient related because one thing to consider with these soilless mixes, what they're called soilless mixes with these potting soils where they're mostly like bark and peat moss and other things, there's no mineral component to provide nutrition to plants. And so it becomes really important that you use a fertilizer that has micronutrients in it. So things like iron, boron, molybdenum, copper, cobalt, all of these micronutrients that plants need, a lot of those that they need for photosynthesis that they would normally get from the mineral component of soils, which is absent in these kinds of soils. So that would be, for me, the first place to start would be to use a more complete fertilizer.
Okay. Yeah.
And then one other thing I wanted to check on your soil before I move on is do you have good drainage, some sort of drainage holes in the container?
Yeah, I have drainage holes.
And then how often are you irrigating?
Well, I've been watering them since it's been so hot. I've been watering them every evening.
Good.
Until the water drains through. So.
Okay.
Yeah, one thing I do with my pots is I like to let them dry out a little bit more thoroughly. So watering every day, if the pot's drying out every day, meaning that the soil's turning a light brown and even starting to shrink a little bit away from the inside edge of the pot, that's actually pretty healthy. But watering every day and keeping that soil a bit on the wet side can lead to root rot, and that could also be another issue, and nasturtiums are prone to that in containers that are overwatered.
Okay.
So
I do have planted in another area, which is not in a pot. It's just under some trees, but it gets the afternoon and late afternoon sun, and they're doing okay, but they don't have any blossoms either. And that's just in a natural soil.
Okay. Yeah, and so they're it just could be a heat related. Is another possibility with those.
And so would that be the brown spots or the fact that there's no blossoms? Both?
That would be more the fact that no blossoms. It could be the brown spots, but there's probably any number of foliar diseases that they could get. At this point, I'm probably not too worried about the brown spots. That's not probably...
We could have her. She lives in Utah County, so we could have her email some pictures to Meredith.
Exactly.
So email some pictures to gardenhelp, that's all one word, gardenhelp@usu.edu.
And it's gardenhelp as in H-E-L-P, not health as in healthiness.
I thought you were going to say garden hell.
Yeah, garden help, yeah. Help.
Yeah, H-E-L-P.
At usu.edu.
usu.edu.
Okay. And that's for Utah County. And sometimes Meredith gets a little backed up, but she will get to you.
Okay.
All right,
Jerry.
Hopefully that helps you out, and you'll get the help you need from the pitchers. So we are going to take another break here at the top of the hour. When we come back, we're going to talk about some WaterWise.
Yeah, drip irrigation.
Drip irrigation. And we've been teasing that a little bit today, and that's why we have our team here. We're going to talk a little drip next hour. So we are going to come back with that and be back with more on the other side of news, traffic, and weather on the KSL Greenhouse Show.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.